Thank you. May it please the Court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Matt Dornauer, and I, along with my co-counsel, Eric Babs, represent the appellant Melvin Spells in this case. We're third-year law students at Notre Dame Law School, and we're advised by Bob Palmer. Your Honors, this case is an appeal from the Southern District of Indiana, which involves various sentencing issues, specifically those which implicate the Armed Career Criminal Act, the ACCA. Spells requests that his sentence be vacated and remanded for resentencing because the district court committed substantive error in this case. Your Honor, substantive error occurred because Spells' prior offense of resisting law enforcement or fleeing should not be deemed a violent felony under the ACCA. Now, just 2 days ago, the Supreme Court of the United States...
You got some new ammunition, did you, 2 days ago?
We did bolster our ammunition a little bit, Your Honor. That's correct. Supreme Court issued a seminal case in terms of the ACCA and offered a new analytical framework. And we believe that this analytical framework bolsters our case because it limits the scope, the universe of those crimes that are considered to be violent felonies. Specifically, this new framework applies to predicate offenses with no analog among the enumerated crimes. And that's exactly what our crime is. It does not have an analog to arson, burglary, use of explosives, or extortion. Specifically, the test that the court enumerated was that first you would they reaffirmed Taylor's elements-based approach, so you first look at the elements of the statute, and then secondly, they added a new prong. And this was a prong that says that the predicate offense must be similar in both kind and also in the degree of risk. And then the court defined what they meant by similar. They said it needs to be purposeful, violent, and aggressive. And, Your Honors, we believe that the fleeing offense under which our client was convicted is none of those. Specifically, it is not purposeful because it doesn't involve a purpose to harm either property, nor does it involve a purpose to harm others. The subsection under which he was convicted, B1A, simply requires a knowing or intentional use of a vehicle to flee from a law enforcement officer after the officer has, by visual or audible means, including operation of the sirens or lights, identified him or herself. So, Your Honors, the plain language of this does not require any sort of violence, nor does it require any sort of aggression. Moreover, by implication, B1B, also a Class D felony in Indiana, does require what we would consider to be potentially purposeful, violent, and aggressive harm, but B1A, on the other hand, does not. So the Indiana legislature has clearly drawn the line between what could potentially be violent and aggressive, and our fleeing statute does not fall on that violent side of the line. Rather, it falls on the nonviolent side. Your Honors, this type of fleeing is not the kind of offense, nor does it pose the degree of risk similar to the enumerated offenses set forth in the ACCA. Now, I'd also like to address the Housie and Rosas opinions in this circuit, and we believe that those are distinguishable, especially in light of the Begay case that just came down.
Well, the charge he was under also, you left out part of it, says, or in a manner that creates substantial risk of bodily injury to another person.
That is correct. B1B does say that, Your Honor. However, we believe that in the government's brief, they concede that Spells was convicted under B1A. On page 26 of their brief, in particular, they set forth that they concede that he was convicted under A3, and it involved the use of a vehicle. So A3 plus the use of a vehicle takes you to B1A as opposed to B1B. Therefore, we believe that B1A sets forth nonviolent, non-aggressive conduct. Your Honors, in regard to the Begay and the Rosas decisions, as I mentioned, this new framework calls for a new test. Those decisions were using the plain language of the statute. Does this pose a serious potential risk of harm to others? Which, in those cases, a Wisconsin statute that set forth fleeing, it was held to do so. However, in our case, that's not the same sort of statute. We have a statute that doesn't involve any endangerment to others, any risk-creating conduct to others.
Well, let me just do a hypothetical. If it had been charged under the other one that I read to you, then you would agree that it is such an offense.
Yes, Your Honor. We believe that it could potentially satisfy the purposeful, violent, and aggressive conduct. However, a B1A we do not believe does. And once again, Your Honors, in regard to the Rosas and Housie decisions, we believe that those are distinguishable, first, because it was decided under the old framework. Secondly, we have a statute that doesn't elucidate any sort of endangerment of others element. And then also, Your Honors, other circuit courts, in particular the 6th and the 9th, have held that functionally identical statutes to the one at bar here, under the old test, mind you, were considered to be nonviolent. So we feel that under Begay, the new standard, which raises the bar for determining whether something is a violent felony.
Yeah, I don't think you'd fare too well if you didn't have the Supreme Court case for you.
We could see that, Your Honor. We were very fortunate that the case came down just 2 days ago.
Every now and then you get lucky.
Yeah, it could have been it, too.
At the luck of the Irish?
Yeah. Hey, no Irish.
Don't turn it down. Luck beats brains most of the time, every time.
I would agree with that, Your Honor. As I was saying, Your Honors, other circuit courts have held that even under the old standard, functionally identical statutes were held to be nonviolent. In addition, Your Honors, although I mentioned that the government had conceded that this was under A3, if there's any doubt and qualms as to whether or not it was underneath A3, we believe that a procedural error occurred and that this case should be remanded for the district court to look at proper Shepherd materials. Because all it says in the charging documents is that it was a Class D felony, and that's a divisible statute. So Shepherd requires that we go back and look deeper into the record to discern the exact subsection under which Spells was convicted. And in this case, we posit that it was under B1A. And I believe that the government concedes that in their brief. However, it is fairly unclear. Therefore, that's another reason for remand, is this procedural error in this case. Your Honors, once again, I would just like to reaffirm that this Begay case, as we just talked
about...
Now you're
in a rebuttal.
No, I am. Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honors.
You feel comfortable now to go sit down.
I do. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Donauer. Ms. Pratt.
May it please the Court. My name is Doris Pryor. I'm an Assistant United States Attorney for the Southern District of Indiana. The government's position is that the defendant waived his objections to
what?
The district that the...
This case came out two days ago.
Yes, Your Honor. We would argue that any arguments regarding the sentencing calculation was waived in the lower court.
Really?
Spells never raised any of these arguments before the district court, even though he had the opportunity to do so.
He had an opportunity to be facing about five cases that came out of this court. One is what recently is 2 weeks ago.
So yes,
it
Your Honor.
Undermined him completely. Raising it would strike me as being fairly silly at that stage of the game.
Well, as regards to Begay, Yes, Your Honor, you are correct. I apologize. As to Begay versus the United States, we would argue that this case is distinguishable from the facts underlying the Begay case. In the Begay case, the offense that the Supreme Court addressed was driving under the influence.
It was the danger that they're talking about in both cases.
That is correct, Your Honor.
It's more dangerous to drive when you're sober getting away than when you're drunk?
The court held that the conduct, the underlying conduct, was accidental or negligent. It was a strict liability statute. And the court held that it was not similar to the enumerated crimes of burglary, arson, extortion, because the conduct of driving under the influence could be performed without purposeful, violent, or aggressive behavior. You could be sitting in your car and intoxicated, and at that point, you are driving. You can be considered under Wisconsin statute.
Not if you're sitting in your car with the engine off, smiling pleasantly. That's what you're supposed to do. Turn the engine off, put your head down, and sleep.
If the engine is running, Your Honor, and you're driving 10 miles per hour.
You're driving 10 miles an hour, 5 miles an hour, doesn't mean you're driving. Yes, you're DUI.
Yes, Your Honor, and that conduct
is. If you're doing 70 miles an hour and you're drunk?
The conduct.
Shouldn't we go back with this case and let them look at the conduct?
I would argue, Your Honor, that
go ahead.
I would argue that it would not need to go back to be remanded because the conduct of resisting law enforcement is categorically a crime of violence. Fleeing from law enforcement is purposeful, violent, and aggressive behavior on the offense. It's categorically a crime of violence. And based on the Begay case, I believe that this type of conduct makes it more likely that an offender who is fleeing from law enforcement is, as the Begay case held, would be characteristic of an armed career criminal or the use of a gun in the hands of a person that has committed prior violent, purposeful, aggressive behavior in the past. It's more dangerous to have this person have a gun in his hand.
The discussion I had with your opposing counsel, but he wasn't charged under the section of which could conceivably say it's a potential serious risk of injury to another, which defines it. I mean, that takes it out of this, the one he was charged with, right?
If he was charged with A, Your Honor, I believe that the conduct itself of fleeing from a law enforcement officer in a vehicle is categorically a crime of violence relying on United States versus House. And that subsection of the Indiana...
You don't think the Supreme Court decision of 2 days ago changes that?
No, Your Honor. I believe that that case can be distinguished from the facts of this case. Even if the court was to find that Spells accidentally omitted or forfeited his challenge to the lower court's sentencing calculation, the record is consistent with proper conduct. Spells agreed with the court's finding, lower court's finding, that his prior violent felonies, his prior violent convictions were enough to qualify him as an armed career criminal, and that he understood that because of his prior violent convictions that he was deemed a career offender under the guidelines. Spells conceded and agreed. Spells trial counsel agreed with the district court's computation. Based on that, even if the court was to find forfeiture in this matter and not waiver, we would argue that Spells is unable to demonstrate the second prong of plain error, that his rights have been effectively, his substantial rights have been affected. Presumably, he is unable to show prejudice. The court has held in Thornton that this court will not presume prejudice where its existence is easily discoverable by the defendant. And in this case, all Spells needed to do to demonstrate prejudice was submit the criminal complaints from the prior convictions to the sentencing judge. And based on his inability to show prejudice, the government would argue that the sentencing should be upheld. Your Honor, based on Begay, I believe that the facts of this case can be distinguished. And we, if there are no further questions for the court, the government would submit the remaining issues on the brief.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Pryor. Mr. Babbs?
Thank you, Your Honors. The government's contentions of waiver are unfounded because Spells and his counsel did not make a strategic decision to relinquish any sentencing challenges now brought.
Well, even if they're forfeited, we could look at it under plain error, right?
Yes, certainly. And under plain error, this court would have to find plain error because error is now plain on appeal given the Begay holding and the totally new framework the Begay sets forth. Prejudice doesn't need to be argued here because holding that Spells' fleeing offense is not an act of violent felony would take out the entire ACCA enhancement, thereby taking out the 15-year mandatory minimum. It would also eliminate the career offender enhancement for reasons explained in our brief, and therefore would also reduce Spells' guidelines range on counts 1 and 3 to about half of what it was calculated in the district court. As in United States v. James, this case presents an oversight by defense counsel, and that such oversight can be inferred from the record because, for one reason, the issue of whether ACCA properly applied to Spells wasn't discussed in a clear or specific way at the sentencing hearing. The district judge made only vague and broad references to the seriousness of Spells' prior convictions, but not to any specific prior convictions. And also the district court did not ask Spells or his attorney if they had any objections to the ACCA component of the sentencing calculation in particular.
Well, the counsel was on notice that of the prior convictions, the two robbery convictions and the fleeing conviction, right?
Yes, counsel was on notice well prior to sentencing, as explained in the government's brief. I see my time has expired. May I continue my response? Spells would have had everything to gain and nothing to lose from raising these issues in the district court. So waiver, a strategic decision to relinquish these arguments should not be inferred, and in any event, Spells gets the benefit of the doubt because waiver principles are construed liberally in the defendant's favor. Thank you, Your Honors.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Babbs. Thank you, Ms. Breyer. Mr. Dornauer and Mr. Babbs, thank you for assisting the court. Mr. Palmer, thank you for your supervision, and of course, thanks to the University of Notre Dame and the Law School for participating in this program. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.